We are studying tonight from the book of Proverbs. Most of you know about my passion for this particular book. It's just a terrific book. Just so useful to us in our everyday life. And as I mentioned before, the whole concept of wisdom and what the wisdom writer has to say on the subject is really just telling us and helping us on a horizontal, in a horizontal way of understanding how to be skillful with the people with whom we deal each day of our life and the choices we make, that we might not impact, you know, our vertical relationship with God. And there's just so many different things that are addressed in this wonderful book. And I've always said there's 31 chapters because God saw to it that we would have 31 chapters, because typically there's 31 days, and you can read one per day and do that every day the rest of your life, and you would really do yourself a favor. So many good things here. One of the things I've struggled with over the years is people's definition from Proverbs chapter 9 and verse 1, wisdom has built her house, she has sown her seven pillars. I have seen, and you probably have too, a number of different representations of what those seven pillars are. I don't know where some of them come from, but there are different views about what they be. I think far too many of them are just man's concoction of what those pillars ought to be. Some people take the idea that that particular verse is evidenced or seen in the book of James, as James talks about the subject involving wisdom. Let's see where that is now. I know it's there. James, chapter 4, I thought. There you go. Thank you. I had it marked wrong, and I was struggling trying to find it. I don't know why I was struggling. But anyway, the idea behind the concept of wisdom and what James has to say in verse beginning, verse 13, who is wise and understanding among you? By his good conduct let him show his works in the meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your heart, do not boast and be false to the truth. This is not the wisdom that comes down from above, but is earthly, unspiritual, demonic. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exists, there will be disorder and every vile practice. But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, open to reason, full of mercy and good fruits, impartial and sincere. And a harvest of righteousness sown in peace by those who make peace. And that is exactly the passage. And so the idea there is there are different ideas, and you could take James's view as it relates to those pillars, that it is those things that he has listed here. And the idea of seven, and the concept of seven, of course, in the Hebrew was a word of completeness or perfect. The seven is used a good many times. It comes from a Hebrew name called Sheva, S-H-E-V-A-H. It has the idea would be to be full or satisfied. And it has to do then with spiritual perfection, I think. You look at the scriptures and you'll see things, particularly in the Revelation book, but also, you know, even in creation, 7 days there, the 6 days that were needed for creation and the seventh day of rest. The number seven there. The seven stars. The seven golden lampstands. The seven seals of God's judgment. The seven seals on the scroll. The seven angels with seven trumpets. On and on. That's used, the term is used to help us to understand completeness. So we learn in the book of Proverbs about the seven things that God hates. Six things and then one. So the idea, I think we understand, is used frequently. In the seven pillars that are being discussed here, wisdom, as we understand in the book of Proverbs, is symbolized as a woman who has built a permanent house in this particular situation for herself. Wisdom is personified. It's as if it were a person. If you were to go back and look for her, you would not find a person. But you would see the idea of wisdom being personified as if it were a person. And we see in chapter 9 and verse 1, that's exactly the way it appears to us. I, wisdom, is there shown to us. And wisdom then is not a tent that's been moved around as the way it's depicted here, but instead is a permanent thing. It's a concept that there's long-term housing involved here in wisdom as it relates. It's a permanent sort of thing. And I want us to understand that as we look at the particular phrase and we talk about the meaning of it, you're really getting my thinking about what the seven pillars are of the, regarding wisdom. And I think it's there for, at least for me, to see in the context. I don't think you have to go to another book or you have to kind of concoct up or think up your own message as it relates to that. I think if you go backwards to chapter 8, you see exactly being described there what those particular pillars are. And I may be misreading it, so I'll be glad to hear your ideas about this, but I think I'm taking Scripture as it's revealed to us and it's shown to us as it relates to these particular ideas. It says in chapter 8, in verse 12 through 14, I, wisdom, dwell with prudence, and I find knowledge and discretion. The fear of the Lord is hatred of evil. Pride and arrogance in the way of evil and perverted speech I hate. I have counsel and sound wisdom. I have insight. I have strength. If you count those up, there are seven attributes there. And so, as we look at those seven attributes, prudence, knowledge and discretion, the fear of the Lord, counsel, sound wisdom, and insight, with all of those attributes applied to us, then we have the seventh pillar, or strength, that comes from that. Now, we all understand what pillars do. Pillars are meant to hold up the roof. And they're not something that are done or you should take lightly as it relates to their importance. And these were hewn, is what the passage says from chapter 9. They were made from stone, and they were put together in order to serve a purpose. And the purpose was, as those columns were built, were to hold up the roof. And they were put in points of importance in order to do the job that they needed to do in order to make and get that job done. And they were intended to help increase the life, even give permanence to the structure itself. And so I think as we go through these, maybe you'll see that these are things certainly that could apply to chapter 9, verse 1. In my case, I believe they do, but I certainly wouldn't go to war with you over it if you looked at it a little differently. But I want you to see there that it says, I, wisdom, dwell with prudence. And this has to do with being wise, in handling those things that are about to happen to us, using good common sense. It has to do with our behavior. Behavior is defined as the deliberate response of an individual. And so it has to do with what we deliberately are trying to do or accomplish with a given objective or a goal. And the wise man here, the wisdom writer, is telling us that as it relates to a choice that we're about to make, we're deliberate in the making of that choice, and we're understanding of the fact that when we make that particular choice, it's going to reflect on who we are. So we need to be prudent. So, for example, we would know if we were a prudent person, that a particular act that we were about to engage in would have far-reaching impacts or effects that may be diverse. We wouldn't do it. We might think in and of itself it'd be okay for me to do a particular thing, but that might cause somebody over here to think less of who I am in my relationship with God. So rather than go ahead and push forward because we think that thing is innocent, we back off from that because it's the prudent thing to do as it relates to what wisdom is. And I think that's exactly the idea that we're talking about here. It's really, has much to do with who we are in our character. And character is what we are. And so as it relates to our behavior, the decisions we make certainly impact our character. Hosea in chapter 14 and verse 9 said this, "Whoever is wise, let him understand these things. Whoever is discerning, let him know them. For the ways of the Lord are right, and the upright walk in them, but transgressors stumble in them." Now the word discerning there, whoever is discerning, that's the English Standard Version rendering. It says prudent in the King James, the New King James, the American Standard Version. So let him understand these things, whoever is prudent, whoever is discerning appropriately or properly. So that transgressors, as we walk in that particular decision, don't transgress because of the decision we made. That's the idea that's being conveyed. So it's the ability that one has, that I have, that you have, of keeping ourselves from being misled or others from being misled as it relates to a particular action. Jesus in Matthew chapter 10, verse 6, and talking about us being wise as serpents, says this, "Behold, I am sending you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. So be wise as serpents and innocent as doves." Now, he's not telling us to be naive as it relates to that. In fact, even Proverbs has something to say about that when he warns us about naivety in Proverbs chapter 22 and verse 23, "For the Lord will plead their cause and rob of life of those who rob them." That's not my passage. 22 and verse 3, sorry. "The prudent sees danger and hides himself, but the simple go on and suffer for it." That's the naive, the simple there. And so we don't want to be naive, but we do want to be careful as we make our particular discussion, our decisions, that we're prudent in making. Wise as serpents is the idea in the making of that. That as we gain knowledge about a particular subject matter, and that would be who this prudent person is, he's certain about the thing he's about to do. He's deliberate in his decision making, and he tries to avoid any pitfalls that would cause him to be put in an improper light in the mind of somebody else or to cause them to sin. It helps us to behave, to discriminate between truth and error. Second of all, and that's in the head of the curve, by the way, before we actually get into that particular activity or involve ourselves with it. Wise as serpents. And then number two, knowledge and discretion, the second pillar in addition to this one on being discerning or prudent. The two there being joined together. "I, wisdom, dwell with prudence, and I find knowledge and discretion," 8 verse 12. And this comes from a Hebrew word, mezama, which means the power of forming plans. And it has to do with the wiseness as it relates to how we devise or imagine or plot something out. And it kind of is an offshoot from the first pillar, in that we're very careful about the decision that we're about to make, and we reason the best direction to head in. My dad used to tell me as a young guy, I can remember him, as we were thinking through a particular idea, he would say, "Okay, let's just sit down and think about this." Sometimes he'd have me get a piece of paper and write it down, put a line down the middle. And he'd say, "Take this as far left as you can. What's going to happen over here if we do this? Now take it as far right as you can. Now what's going to happen over here?" And that could be good, bad, whatever you want to do to help make that. And he was forcing me to get knowledge and use discretion about something. And far too many just don't do that. They don't have this particular pillar and don't practice it. And we need to carefully be teaching people to do that. God doesn't want us to put ourselves in dangerous situations and then throw up our hands and expect him to rescue us. That's the idea. We're about to walk into something that's really stupid, and then we're going to ask God to take care of it for us when we know the thing that we're about to walk into is stupid. We know it's not the right thing for us to do, but we're going to do it anyway. And then ask the brethren or ask God to help us resolve that particular problem. If you drive, at 110 miles an hour on 400, that's pretty stupid. Now, I don't know why you might be doing that, and there might be some logic behind it, but I think we all understand that the end course, the result of that, is not going to be positive for us if we do that. We're either going to hurt ourselves, hurt somebody else, or at minimum get stopped, thrown in jail for excessive speed. If you walk down into downtown Atlanta, into a dark alley at 2 o'clock in the morning, that wouldn't be a real wise thing for you to do, and then to throw your hands up and say, God, I know you'll take care of me and all this. I mean, I'm just suggesting to you that we sometimes just don't use common sense with some particular way of applying things. And I understand having faith and confidence in God, but we need to use common sense as it relates to it as well. In Proverbs 14, 15, 16, the wisdom writer says, the simple believes everything, but the prudent gives thought to his steps. One who is wise is cautious and turns away from evil. Listen now, but a fool is reckless and careless. And the one translation says he's hot-headed, yet feels secure. NIV. This particular person then sees himself and begins making decisions that really are not logical, don't make any sense at all, and they know that they're not making any sense. They know they're dumb. They know they're stupid. They know they shouldn't be doing it, but they do it anyway, then throw their hands up to God and then count the brethren, go to the brethren to help them resolve a particular issue. And that's not the kind of thing that that's the pillar that God is asking us to do. He's asking us instead to be wise people, sagacious people, people who plan things out, look to the future, see the end in a wise way. Noah did that. He was moved with fear when he prepared the ark for the saving of his family. He saw the wisdom in that. David was directed by wisdom to hide himself from Saul. The disciples were taught to flee from impending evil of the Roman army. You can read about that in Matthew chapter 10 and 24. Paul repeatedly hid himself from threat and destruction, even Jesus himself. One occasion in Nazareth as a young man as he was teaching there in the synagogue, they threatened to throw him down a cliff. And we need to use common sense as it relates to this. So the second pillar is knowledge and discretion. The third pillar is the fear of God, I think. The fear of the Lord is hatred of evil, pride and arrogance, and the way of evil and perverted speech I hate. And I want us to see that this third pillar is grounded, firmly grounded in the fear of the Lord. Proverbs chapter 1, verse 7. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. There needs to be attention given to the fact that just as much as God requires of us to love Him, He requires of us to fear Him. In fact, more is said about the subject of fear in the Bible than is the word love. Used many more times, almost twice as many times. God requires of us to love Him, but He expects us to respect Him and to fear Him as well. Hebrews chapter 10, verse 31, the writer says, it's a fearful thing to fall into the hands of the living God. And fearing God means having an attitude toward God that is practical, a practical expression of our attitude in our day-to-day life toward how He expects us to live and what He wants us to do to please Him. It's really how we demonstrate the first two pillars that we talked about, prudence, knowledge, and discretion. You're going to be more prudent. You're going to use knowledge and discretion in a way you wouldn't use it if you have a proper understanding of what the fear of the Lord is. We need to be careful then that we understand also that serving, worshiping, obeying God, loving Him, fearing Him means hating evil, chapter 8, verse 13. To avoid its very appearance, as Paul would say. To do what David says about the whole subject matter in Psalms 119, 104, hate every false way. Nothing about it. We enjoy, and because of prudence and knowledge and discretion and the fear of God, we avoid those particular things. We don't stand and sit and walk where the ungodly stand, sit, and walk. And then the fourth pillar, I'm not going down, I need to catch up. The fourth pillar is the counsel of God. I find the use of this, I have counsel and sound wisdom or judgment depending upon what version you're looking at in chapter 8, verse 14. Counsel means to give good advice. Counsel means to receive good advice. And we've talked about Proverbs chapter 12 and verse 1 and how the wisdom writer says that he refuses wise counsel is brutish in the Hebrew or stupid in every other translation except the King James. And so we need to be careful in the giving of counsel that it's not stupid. We need to be careful in the receiving of counsel that we hear counsel that makes sense. And then we need to be people who understand that with that counsel, is it going to allow me, encourage me, cause me to be prudent? And with that knowledge and discretion and fear of the Lord, does it make sense for me to go ahead and move forward with a particular counsel I'm giving? And it is the counsel we're giving. Counsel that has at its foundation the fear of the Lord, and for the person that we're talking about has knowledge and discretion and prudence as it relates to it. I know you know of people and have dealt with people who need to listen to wise counsel and are not doing it. And you know that, particularly when you're older and somebody's younger. I very rarely listened to somebody older than me when I was a really young person who I thought could give me really good counsel who I couldn't figure out myself. Isn't it amazing how you look at life when you're a young person that way? You know. Oh, you might say you'd listen, but then you'd not. You're not really. And, you know, it's, you know, well, you want to go with old Mark Twain's expression about how dad is, how smart his dad got as he grew older and older and older. You know, that's certainly true. We do look at our parents as being people who just don't want us to have a good time when we're young, or don't really care and love us like we think they should when we're young. And when we get older, we say, man, I should have listened better and more often. That's some of the wisdom they gave me. Or some older person in the congregation where we're at, who warns us not to be a certain way, to do a certain thing, who encourages us instead to do this, but we're not very prudent, and our knowledge and discretion is not where it ought to be, even if our fear of the Lord is. And I think we're being encouraged here to not only offer sound counsel, to make sure the counsel we do offer is sound, but to seek counsel, to go and to look for people to help us in difficult times. David and Solomon were especially endowed with wisdom. Yet, despite having all this wisdom, it's interesting they still looked for the advice of counselors when it came to making decisions. In David's case, Ahithophel and Hushai were his counselors. Look at 2 Samuel 16. Not always the best counsel. But nonetheless, David saw the need, wise as he was, to go get counsel. For Solomon, in 1 Kings chapter 12, verse 6, it speaks of the old men that stood before Solomon. That's talking about those who counseled him. This is in the context of Rehoboam, who doesn't seek good counsel. He seeks bad counsel from young friends that he had grown up with. Doesn't work out so well for him either. So we should have no fear, I don't think, for going to others for advice and counsel, but the Bible must be the source. If thou counsel, listen to advice and accept instruction that you may gain wisdom in the future. Proverbs chapter 19 and verse 20. And so it should be with us that we listen to advice and we accept instruction so we might gain wisdom in the future. So counseling. Another pillar, the fourth pillar of wisdom, giving good advice to others and taking good advice as well. Why? So that we might be wise. And then the fifth pillar, sound judgment or sound wisdom. I have counsel and sound judgment, wisdom, Proverbs 8, verse 14. Sound wisdom goes back to a Hebrew word, tushiah, which means in general sense, wise behavior. In other words, it's talking about earthy or practical wisdom. It's how we put everyday circumstances and the judgments we make into our lives in a practical way. In chapter 1, verses 1 and 3, the Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction, to understand words of insight, to receive instruction in wise dealing. NIV says the imprudent behavior. In righteousness, justice, and equity. I want you to see that. Because that's what we're talking about when we're talking about wise judgment. Wise judgment, the concept of wise judgment has to do with verse 3, righteousness, justice, and equity. That's what he's saying. This pillar, the fifth pillar, has to do with us taking action, not armchair practice in religion, not armchair decision making, but our active participation in doing something that's righteous, which means to be right or straight. It's in an upright manner that we're making a decision to do this. We are righteous in our judgment. We are just. Justice is the ability to come to a proper understanding of things observed. So we are righteous. We are just. We have a proper understanding of that which is being observed. And then there's equity in verse 3, which means a way of thought and conduct that is honest. It has to do with fairness. It has to do with impartiality. We are righteous. We are just. We have equity in our life. That's sound judgment. That's the pillar that Solomon is telling us he wants to take. The fifth pillar has to do with sound judgment, meaning behaving each day with these three great things or themes in our life. Righteousness, justice, and equity. When you do that, by the way, and you see that in people's life, that's the person you seek to counsel you. You find that person to go to say, okay, I don't know what to do because I see in your life somebody who's righteous, somebody who's just in their decision making and understands what equity is all about, and I know that you'll share with me that which is wise. That's the kind of pillar we're talking about. Number six, the sixth pillar, understanding or insight. I have counsel and sound wisdom. I have insight. I have strength. Chapter 8 and verse 14. To understand something, we must do three things. We must first know the source of all wisdom comes from above. If you really want to have a proper understanding of something, look at chapter 2 and verses. And let's just go to chapter 2 because we're going to make all three points from it as it relates to these three things that must go on in our life to have understanding. The wisdom writer says in verse 1, my son, if you receive my words and treasure up my commandments with you, making your ear attentive to wisdom and inclining your heart to understanding, yes, if you call out for insight and raise your voice for understanding, you seek it like silver and search for it as a hidden treasure. Notice this now. Then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find knowledge of God. In verse 9, then you will understand righteousness and justice and equity and every good path. If we want to be people who have this sixth pillar as part of our life that will hold up our lives and cause us to be what we ought to be in our relationship with God, then we'll come to understand the importance of insight. Not casual about that at all. We're not casual in our approach to it. We put on our miner's hat and we seek after this as if it were a treasure. That's the picture being placed here. We are in this mine. We got this hat on with the light shining and we're digging away. We're digging, 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 trying to find the silver that he refers to or talks about. And it's when you dig, it's when you search like that, you want that kind of insight, you want that kind of understanding, you begin to understand what this pillar is all about, and the wisdom writer says, it's when you look for something that diligently, and you seek for it that way, it's then that you'll find understanding, and you'll get what it means to be righteous, and have justice and equity in your life, in verse 9. And then, the seventh point. Strength and power. I have counsel and sound wisdom. I have insight. I have strength. The King James Version uses the word might there. English Standard Version says strength. Other translations say power. I have no quarrel with any of those terms. And I will tell you now that what this passage is teaching us as it relates to these seven pillars is that, and I keep advancing this, is that when you get to the point where you've applied prudence and knowledge and discretion and fear of the Lord and counsel and sound judgment and insight, when you've done those six things, the result of that is going to be what? Power. Strength. Might. You will then be, as one would look at a house, you will have all the pillars that in their combined work, as they work together, one next to the other, could not be any stronger. And the dignity of that particular structure will be maintained not just for a little while, but permanently. And there's power in that. There's strength in that. And the idea that's being conveyed here is that we will have that particular strength and power when we attain the previous six pillars. And I just think it's important that we understand that fortification against the evils of this world, about the things that are going on. If you look at our text in Proverbs chapter 9, wisdom has built their house. It's really a contrast in the first 12 verses against folly in the following 9 or 10 verses, 8 verses, whatever. And we're trying to learn then how to have these pillars built up to hold up the roof of life, and how to make decisions, wisdom against folly. And the writer is telling us, if you want permanency in what you need to be in your relationship with God, learn prudence, knowledge, and discretion, fear of the Lord, counsel, sound judgment, insight, and you'll have a power that will help you deal with life in every single way. There won't be anything or any challenge that comes along that you won't be able to handle. I just think it's important that we see the value of these particular pillars, and I wanted to review those a little bit tonight. As I think about this in conclusion, as we're thinking about this particular subject matter, I want to think about Isaiah chapter 11, verses 1 through 5. I'm not sure if I put, no, I didn't put it on here. And you can turn there if you want. I'll give you a chance if you want to do that. But I want you to see what Isaiah has to say in his prophecy about Jesus Christ and these particular pillars. Listen, you won't hear exactly the same words, but you're going to see the same tone in the prophecy involving Jesus and what characteristics he would have, this branch from the roots of Jesse. There shall, this is again Isaiah 11, 1 through 5. There shall come forth a shoot from the stump of Jesse, and a branch from his roots shall bear fruit, and the Spirit of the Lord shall rest upon him. The Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the Spirit of counsel and might, the Spirit of knowledge and the fear of the Lord. And his delight shall be in the fear of the Lord. He shall not judge by what his eyes see, or decide disputes by what his ears hear. But with righteousness he shall judge the poor, and decide with equity for the meek of the earth. And he shall strike the earth with the rod of his mouth, and with the breath of his lips he shall kill the wicked. Righteousness shall be the belt of his waist, and faithfulness the belt of his loins. And so, you see, I think, anyway, what the text, the Proverbs, basically says about what could be the seven pillars. I just think it's obvious to me that's what they were in context. But I may not have it right. And there are many different definitions of what those ideas might be, but certainly these are characteristics that would be pillars for us, things that we need to have and embrace in our own life. And I don't know about you, but I'm looking at some way to become more skillful in my life as it relates to things that go about me every single day. There are things that challenge me on a regular basis, some that have to do with spiritual things and some that don't. Some that just have to do with my children and what's a logical decision. And wouldn't it be good for us to step back and look at these pillars for a minute and say, okay, am I developing in my thought process the things that are outlined in Proverbs chapter 8, verses 12 through 14? And before I counsel this person or this son or daughter or brother or sister or mom or dad or whoever it might be, I'm gonna stop for a moment and understand that this needs to be a deliberate thing, because that's what these pillars are involved, include, and are part of. Maybe I would pray about this for a little bit before I offer counsel. Most of you know I have a brother that, you know, basically has stage 4 lymphoma right now. Basically does have stage 4 lymphoma. And he calls me, or I call him, a few times a week, three times a week, just to talk. And he'll ask me for counsel. How do I do that? Now, I want you to just stop and think. That's life, isn't it? That's just life. And you're going to have something similar like that happen to you someday. Now, the easy thing for me to do is just start rattling off words. That's the wrong thing to do, but that's the easiest thing to do. Even if I think I have an answer to his particular question, it may not be advisable for me to offer that counsel. Are you hearing what I'm saying? Sometimes indiscriminate sharing, saying what I know, is not the right thing for my brother in that situation. And a little thought needs to be involved with what to say to that person. And what I'm inviting you to do in this lesson is to look at these 7 pillars and think before you respond. Don't just say what the truth is. Don't just say it that way. But back off a little bit and say, am I being prudent about this? Am I operating with the knowledge that I need to operate? Do I fully understand the environment, the situation? You know, do I have sound judgment or wisdom as it relates to this particular thing? Use these 7 pillars as a way to make you pause and think and stop before you go ahead and offer a piece of advice to somebody. I'm gonna do that. I'm gonna work hard on this, and that's what I've learned from that particular example, because his situation with me being fresh in my mind is it's not always easy to offer advice to somebody who's going through something, a challenge for them that you don't know enough about to make a rational decision or recommendation or counseling about. So be careful what you say. That's the idea. And maybe you have some other circumstance where this would apply, but the idea is for us to all aspire to be wiser, more skillful, as it relates to things that go on in our everyday life. That's what Proverbs is about. Common, everyday things that you and I deal with that are challenges with us, and how do we deal with those things? And let's be careful about not backing off and giving ourselves a breath and some time to think about what it is we're about to say or do, or the way we act, and what the far-reaching implications of that particular action might be. Can we all see that? How that would be valuable for us to do that. All right. So if you're here tonight and you're subject to the invitation, we want to encourage you. This is our time where we invite you to come forward if you're not a Christian, to become a Christian, to become a faithful child of God. And then to be a part of the congregation here, that we might help you. You might help us in this journey that we're all on, trying to find our way to through this life, and that we might finally eventually get to eternity and the place that we all desire and hope to be forever. We might live our 70, but we just all need to pause and stop and think about how long eternity is and realize that this life is just such a, it's just such a short period of time. And let's not do things that'll keep us from getting to heaven. For sure, if you're not a Christian, let's not let your fear or anything that's going on in your life, your family life, or anything else that's prohibiting you from moving forward in your own mind to be the thing that keeps you from getting to heaven as well. And we just want to encourage you, no matter what your state might be right now, if you're not a Christian, that you'll make that right and become a Christian. If you are a Christian and you need the prayers of this congregation because of sin you've committed, get that corrected tonight, that you don't impact your long-term relationship with God. Won't you come when we stand and sing the invitation song?